I hope everyone is doing well today. So obviously we've come to the last lecture for the course, and I guess the last lecture for your entire summer school as well. So I hope that you've enjoyed everything so far. To finish out the course, we're actually going to be continuing mostly with what we were doing last time. So solving the Ising model for this arbitrary n sites, and then finding different expectation values. And in particular, we're going to be looking for what's called a quantum phase transition in the model. So let me open up my Python and share the screen with you, just to remind you of where we had gotten to last time and what we're going to be doing this time. Okay, so we are here. Right, so what we were doing last time, so we're looking at this Ising model on n sites, and we are constructing these 2 to the n by 2 to the n matrices. I had demonstrated this for you using for this sigma z term, I called the zz matrix. And then I asked you to fill in the matrices for the matrix for this sigma x term, what I called the x matrix. So you filled in some code here using this Kronecker product method. And then you also filled it in the column by column method. And then when we finished last time, my impression is that most people were sort of had just gotten to this part, where after using finding these matrices, then you were plotting the energy eigenvalues and eigenvectors here. So actually, let me open the solutions so I can show you, you know, what I expect that you would have seen there. Okay, so. And we found these matrices. And then, so yeah, so if we plot like with two sites, I didn't actually run the other code before. I should do that. Okay, 1 second. This one, oh, I need this one too. Okay, let's just okay, so if we run with two sites, we see this, which is the same as what we got when we did just the two-site Ising model by itself. Now if we increase the number of sites to, you know, 3, then the number of eigenvalues is going to be 2 to the n, so in this case 8. You can see that at g equals 0, there's only 3 different eigenvalues, but they sort of split as I increase g. And of course, I can go to like 8 sites in the model and suddenly have 2 to the 8 or 256 different eigenvalues, and it looks like a giant mess. Okay, so to solve this like looking like a giant mess thing, I added this parameter that we can use, which is called show lowest. So this, when set to false, it just plots all the eigenvalues. But if I set this to like, you know, 5, it's gonna plot only the 5 lowest eigenvalues. So in that case, it looks like this. So what you can see, and when you do this sort of zooming in, is that the lowest eigenvalue, that's this blue line, that's the ground state energy, is separated from the second eigenstate by some kind of gap over here. So you can see that there's like an energy gap between the lowest state and the next lowest state. On the other hand, when g is around 0, this gap completely vanishes. These two eigenvalues come together. So from this, we can say that this model has a degenerate ground state. That is, there's two eigenstates of equal energy that are both the lowest when g is equal to 0, and that's not true when g is large. So in the limit where the number of sites goes to infinity, this becomes actually a sharp transition, that there's going to be some value of g here where everything to the left, these two eigenvalues are exactly equal, and everything to the right, they're not equal. And so that point where this happens is what we'd call the quantum phase transition. So this is something which we're going to be looking at once you do some more calculations in the exercises for today. I think you'll be able to see this a little bit more clearly. So this is one of the things we're going to be looking for. Another thing that I put in as an option, although the code that you have actually has an error in it, which was noticed by one of you. So yeah, thanks for pointing that out. But I fixed it in my code, and I'll send out the solutions in which it's fixed later on today. But if I set this ground state at zero option to true, then what it does is it subtracts the lowest eigenvalue from all of the eigenvalues for each value of g. So instead of plotting the actual eigenvalues, what it plots is for each eigenvalue, it plots the difference between that one and zero. So then here in this picture, you can really see clearly that these orange and blue lines are equal, and then suddenly they split and they're not equal anymore. However, both sides still have what you'd call an energy gap. So in this case, we have two ground states, but there's still a large gap to the third state. So this gap can be measured by comparing the second and third eigenvalues. So that's another thing we're going to be doing down below. Okay, so this is sort of exploring these eigenvalues for a larger number of sites than two. But now the next thing to do is to calculate some expectation values. And this is where we're going to pick up today with your exercises. So for the two-site model, what we found was the average of sigma x on site 0 and site 1. So now we're going to look at the average of sigma x on all the n sites, whatever n happens to be. And we also looked at this correlation function for two sites between sigma z on site 0 and sigma z on site 1. And so here, we're going to look at sigma z on site 0, that is the first site of the chain, and sigma z on site n minus 1, which is the last site. And the reason for looking at this combination is that these spins are really far apart from each other. They're as far apart as you can get. If this correlation function is not zero, then that means that spins that are far apart from each other have a tendency to have behavior that it like, where one, the behavior of one spin depends on the state of the other spin. That's the idea of this correlation function. So if the two spins that are really far apart from each other have a non-zero correlation function, it means there's what's called long-range order, that there's some kind of ordering in the system that makes spins that are far apart from each other have like related behavior to each other. And so that's something which, you know, it generically will happen in some kinds of quantum phases and not in other phases. So again, this correlation function is going to be really good for helping us to find the location of the quantum phase transition. This will be zero in one phase and it'll be non-zero in another phase. So that's what we're looking for. Okay, so at this point, I want to go ahead and get started with the exercises. So we're going to be doing exercises for, you know, roughly half of the class time, possibly more depending on how it's going and how people are doing. So that's what I'm going to now set up these breakout rooms and send you to your small groups. In the meantime, I will answer questions while I'm getting that going. So there's a question in the chat that says, will this long range order most often be due to external factors? So this long range order, the answer to that question kind of depends on what model you're looking at. So in the Ising model, it's actually the opposite of that. Let me get these breakout rooms sort of going, so it'll take me a moment of paying attention to that. But I will come back to your question in a moment. Okay, looks good. Looks good. Okay. So the breakout rooms are ready to go after I answer this question. So if you think about the Ising model, we have the two terms that are like the J times sigma Z, sigma Z. And so what that term does is it takes different spins that are inside of the, that are in the system, and says that they have some interaction with each other, with their neighbors. The spin on site I has an interaction with the spin on site I plus one. So that's a very internal kind of thing. And in this case, the H term, that's H times sum on sigma X, that's actually the external thing. So I think I said at the beginning of the very first lecture that that H represents the strength of a magnetic field that you apply. So in this case, I've been a little bit careless in saying the long range, like what is really an indication of long range order, but like in that case, you'll find that this H, when H is very very large, that is, you apply a very strong magnetic field, that will have a tendency to create a large expectation value for sigma x, but actually this ZZ correlation will go to zero. So in fact, the long range order is really a measure of the internal behavior of the system, and external things like applying a magnetic field will often destroy that order rather than the other way around. Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and open the breakout rooms now unless there are more questions. So I'd like you to go continue through these Python exercises. And I should also mention that, at some point you may think that you are done, you finished everything. So at that point, I will ask you to sort of contact me. I think you should be able to send me a message in the chat or something. And then I will come and give you some more things to work on at that point. Okay, so it looks like everybody is back in the main class here. So I think everybody, as far as I could tell, reached the point of making these plots. So let me share my screen so we can talk about it concretely. So I think everyone reached the point of making these sort of figures here. And then I was going around and talking to each group individually to point out the fact that as I increase n, we can see different types of behavior as I change g. Like at small g, this delta 1 converges to 0 as I increase n. And at large g, it converges to a non-zero value. And there's some point, some value of g, where that behavior changes. And I had to use this bit of code to try to find where that point is. And I've kind of given away the answer here. It turns out that the transition is exactly at g equals 1. So at this g equals 1 point, the first two eigenstates become exactly degenerate in energy, and the limit of n goes to infinity. So there's, and then above here, and above g equals 1, they're not degenerate. And this is what's called the quantum phase transition. As I change a parameter in the model, in this case g, I get two different quantum phases which have very different behavior. So the g less than 1 part of the g less than 1 model has what's called a ferromagnetic quantum phase, where the spins all tend to align. And it happens that this two ground states are degenerate, and the reason why is because having all the spins be up and having all the spins be down are both equal in energy. At the same time, you also get that this ZZ expectation value is non-zero when G is less than 1, because again, we're in the ferromagnetic phase, which has long-range ferromagnetic order. That means all the spins tend to point in the same direction as each other along Z. So the ZZ will be, the two spins in the opposite ends of the chain will both be up or both be down. For G bigger than 1, what we have is called the paramagnetic phase. And basically what that means is the spins just tend to point in whatever direction the external magnetic field is pointing. And that kills the interaction between the spins, which made them all point in Z. Instead, they all point to X, which you can see here. And then this degeneracy between all spins up and all spins down is broken, and this first energy gap is no longer zero. So that's sort of the story that I wanted you to see. And that's basically the story of the Ising model. That we have two phases. For G less than 1, we have a ferromagnetic phase. And for G bigger than 1, we have this paramagnetic phase where there's no more long-range order. So now I want to demonstrate this to you using a more sophisticated method. So I posted this notebook as well online, so you can all look at it later. I had originally hoped that I would have time to actually discuss this algorithm that I'm using here. Of course, that didn't end up happening. But I will, after I show you this, say just a few words about this. But there's something called the matrix product state, which is a way of representing a wave function, which is different from putting in a vector. So in everything we've done so far, we put our n-sight wave function as a 2 to the n component vector, where we listed the coefficients of each of the 2 to the n basis states. So a matrix product state is just a different way of writing the states, but it turns out that it allows for much more efficient numerical algorithms that will let us study larger systems. And one of these algorithms is called ITEBD, which stands for Imaginary Time Evolving Block Decimation. So don't worry about what those words are. That's sort of meaningless. Basically, you can see the code is quite a bit more involved. So this matrix product state object requires quite a lot of code, and you see I've written that here. So it goes on for a while. So it's a bit involved, but as a result, sort of general rule is when you put in more human time, you can reduce the amount of computer time. So here I put in a lot more human time, and we've significantly reduced the computer time. And as a result, I run this ITEVD algorithm on system sizes ranging from 2 sites up all the way to 100 sites. 100 sites being, of course, completely impossible with the method we were using so far. So when I run this, I didn't calculate energy gap because I only found the ground state. With this method, it's generally speaking, you only find the ground state. You can adapt it to also find a few excited states, like first excited state and second excited state, but I haven't done that. So this is just finding the ground state, but we can still do things like calculate the expectation values. So the first thing I'm showing here is the ground state energy as a function of g. And you can see as I increase n, like here's 2 sites, the red line is 5 sites, the green line is 10 sites, et cetera. And you can see it's basically converged by the time I get to 100 sites. So this is the energy per site. And you can see it basically converged across all values of g, this black line. Similarly, if I look at this, this is the average value of Sx on every site. And again, so you can see the values at n equals 2, n equals 5, and n equals 10. So this green line is like the biggest we were able to get to using the exact diagonalization. So now if I go to like 20 sites or 50 sites or 100 sites, you can see the values change a little bit, but sort of qualitatively the behavior is the same. The really interesting one is this SZ, SZA expectation value, because now we can try to see this phase transition we were talking about a little bit more clearly. So you can see this green line, that's the N equals 10. So that's like, again, the largest that we got to with exact diagonalization. But with this MPS-based method, matrix product state-based method, we're able to get all the way to N equals 100, which is this black line. And that's still not enough to actually get this expectation value to be 0 exactly at 1. But you can see, like, if you look here at like a 1.1, with N equals 10, there was still a significant non-zero expectation value. But by N equals 100, it's basically vanished, and the expectation value has become 0. So you can really see then, it looks like a sharp curve that looks like this, and it just goes sharply in to 0 at G equals 1, and then it's completely 0 after that. And so this is an illustration of my one quantum phase, the ferromagnet, and my other quantum phase, which is the paramagnet. So again, I posted this online, so you can look at it more closely if you want to, if you're interested in the code or anything like that. So the last thing I do want to say before we finish the sort of content, real physics content, is I do want to say just a few words about what these matrix product states are and why they're actually useful. So this is going to be not something that's going to be helpful for you to do calculations because we only have 10 minutes, but hopefully it will be something that will give you at least the flavor of why you should care about these things, apart from the fact that you can do 100 sites. So let me share my iPad quickly. Okay. So let's consider n equals 2. So a wave function here, as we said, in general, looks like this. Okay, so some wave functions are called product states. So that's of the form psi equals psi on site 0 tensor Psi, some other Psi on site one. Or in other words, it looks like A0 up plus B0 down tensor A1 up plus B1 down. And what's very important is that not all states are product states. Now, I think that you may have talked about this in your quantum information class, although to be honest, I don't really know what you talked about in that class, so I'm not sure if that's true. So let me just say that that's sort of the key moral here, which is, again, that not all states are product states. So for example, if we consider the state this, up, up, plus down, down over root 2, this is not a product state. It is what we would instead call entangled. Okay, but the next thing I want to say is that product states are useful. So what I mean by this is, now let's consider a general n sites. And I'm going to suppose that I have psi, which is equal, which is a product state. So like psi 0, tensor psi 1, tensor dot, 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 tensor psi n minus 1. And I want to find the expectation value of, let's say, sigma z on site I. It turns out that in a product state, this calculation is really easy. So remember that this is, what this really means is like identity, tensor dot, 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 tensor sigma z on site I, tensor dot, 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 tensor identity. And now, if I do this calculation in my product state, what I find is equal to psi 0, identity psi 0, expectation value times psi 1, identity psi 1, times dot, 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 times psi I, sigma z, psi I, times dot, 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 psi n minus 1, identity, psi n minus 1. That's not, come back. No, stop it. OK, now all of these terms here are just 1, because identity does nothing, and then this is just psi not with itself, so that's just 1. So we get 1 times 1 times dot, 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 times psi I, sigma z, psi I times 1 times dot, 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 1. In other words, with a product state, I only need to know psi I. I don't care about anything else. So we reduced our problem 2 to the n coefficients to 2 coefficients. And so this is why product states are really good for calculation. So the idea of matrix product states is to try to write non-product or entangled states so that we can do the same kind of efficient calculations. And it turns out there is a way to do this. So with n equals 2, for example, we can transform our state that looks like this. Into a state that looks like this, where now instead of being numbers, all of these things are matrices. And this is the basic idea of a matrix product state. And it turns out that any state can be written as a matrix product state. So just as sort of my one brief example that I want to give you, and I think you'll have to check this for yourself since we're out of time. So again, if you look at this example that I gave you, which is not a product state, you can actually write this down. The matrix A0 is 1, 0. The matrix B0 is 0, 1. The matrix A1 is 1 over root 2, 0. And the matrix B1 is 0, 1 over root 2. And you can check that if you write out the state as I defined it here, with these matrices, and you sort of just multiply everything out to get the coefficients of this, like the coefficient of up, for example, is the matrix multiplication of A0 times A1. So if I do that and multiply A0 times A1, I get this 1, 0 row matrix times 1 over root 2, 0 column matrix, and the result is 1 over root 2, which is indeed the coefficient of up times up. So this is just an example. So again, I wanted to spend some time talking about this, but we didn't have time for it. However, I have posted in the Google Drive a set of notes for what I had originally intended to talk about. So if you're interested in this, I'd encourage you to read through the notes. I include some exercises that you can work on and the solutions for the exercises. So hopefully that's something which you will find interesting if you take a look at it. Okay, so I think that pretty much brings us to the end of the actual material for the course. So what I want to end with then is actually just a summary of what it is we've done for the past 2 weeks. So we started off with a review of spin 1/2. And then also included with this, we talked about a sort of general procedure for how to find matrices for operators. Then we talked about tensor products, tensor product spaces, states, and operators. And again, how to find matrices. Then we applied this to the two-site Ising model. And then finally, today and on Wednesday, we looked at the more general N-site Ising model. And we were able to identify a quantum phase transition. So, if you want to test sort of yourself on what you've learned in this course, I've uploaded an exercise you can do. Which is to solve a different model. That's called the XXZ model. It looks like this. So I've uploaded sort of a notebook for you to work on this, to construct the matrices for ZZ, XX, and YY, and find the eigenstates and eigenvalues, find expectation values, all things we've been doing. And I also uploaded a notebook that contains the solution, so you can check your answers and make sure you got it right. Another thing that I included in this notebook, which was something we didn't practice doing at all in the class, but you should be able to do now, just with your knowledge from the class and from quantum mechanics, is to look at dynamics. So if I start with some psi at time zero, then I can find my eigenstates. Of H. I can write my psi of zero equals a sum on I of some coefficient times these eigenstates. And then I can get time evolution. Psi of t equals sum on I ci e to the minus I t ei over h bar times vi. And then you can find expectation values as a function of time. So I think this is a very fun exercise, and I recommend that you try it. So I included in the notebook sort of a framework for you to do this, where we start with a state that looks like this. And then we find sigma z on all sites as a function of time. And basically what you should find is that as I increase time, then originally it looks like you sort of have a sigma z is positive there and zero everywhere else. This is not what I want to say. No time here. These are sites. That's what I want to say. And then as I increase time, then this is going to move. So it's like, it's going to be gonna look sort of like this over time. And you can watch the spin travel around this chain. So that's an exercise which I set up for you. And I recommend that you work on it to give it a try and test the things you've learned in the class. Okay, so I think I'll call that the end of the class. So here we are, done with the class, and I guess done with your summer school. So thanks for listening. I hope that you've enjoyed the experience. I hope it's been a good 2 weeks. As usual, I will stick around for a few minutes to chat or answer your questions you have. But if not, then yeah, I hope you had a good 2 weeks, and I want to wish you a good rest of the summer. I know that there's a lot going on in the world right now, but I hope you have a good summer anyway, and please stay safe.